PPI.org.
Evening. Thank you for joining Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Charlene Dahl is my research team. Thank you, Charlene. Annie Harview is my engineer tonight. Thank you, Annie. And this is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. Tonight, we're speaking with Tasha Callan. Tasha is going to talk to us about her company, Isadore Nutt Company, and also Jewish Disability Awareness and Inclusion Month. Good evening, Tasha, and thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, Sam. It is great to be on. Thank you for having me.
I have to tell everyone, and it's so funny because Tasha says, are you going to talk about her history? I said, yes, whether you like it or not. Tasha and I go a long way back because she was at KFAI when KFAI had a news spot. And Tasha was the mad newswoman, not mad as an angry, of course. But she was right before my show. And it was, I have always good memories of you. So whatever did or didn't transpire, it must have been okay. So,
I will say it was an honor to produce news right before your program because it gave me an opportunity to, you know, learn about some of the issues that you were covering on your show.
Ah, well, thank you. Yes. So it was a lot of fun and I want to, yeah, and boy, have you come a long way. So you used to be our like big news producer, and talk about a little bit about that and you left and what you did and how you came to where you are.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me on. I really do appreciate it. And I'm excited to be here to talk about my company, my history, and as you mentioned, Jewish disability, actually employment awareness and inclusion. I think I forgot an A in there. Advocacy.
Ooh.
I think it's
uh-oh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. I didn't.
Yeah.
Wow.
No. 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 Not. Uh-oh. Because that was my fault. I've forgotten. So we'll get back to what J. Dane is. Jewish Disability Acceptance, Awareness, and Inclusion Month. So we'll get back to that,
okay, that
in a little bit. But real quickly, yes, I was the news director at KFAI Radio over 20 years ago. That seems like it makes me kind of like a dinosaur.
I wasn't thinking you'd actually say how many years ago it was.
Yeah, totally. I have to.
She's totally telling on us.
Yes, okay. I was, you know, I was in my late 20s and fearless. And the great thing about KFAI Radio, for those of you who know or don't know, but there are just so many ways to get involved. And the news department was one of the best ways to get involved. So I started as a volunteer, as you are, being able to come on and do stories about local community issues. That was KFAI's focus, really, was local community issues. But, you know, KFAI provides such an incredible platform for people who, you know, want to flex any kind of muscle, right? Whether
right.
it's
yes.
Play the music you want to play or do the advocacy work that like you're doing, Sam, or go out and cover news stories that are maybe being overlooked by mainstream media. And that's how I found myself at KFAI in the newsroom as a volunteer. And eventually, as you said, became the news director. And I just want to share one really cool story because it does go back to, again, that, you know, when you're smaller, when you're community oriented, you're a little more nimble and you have a little more opportunity, surprisingly, resources available to you. And I had a really special opportunity to go to Cuba. We had an intern through Hamline University, and she was from Germany, and her program specifically allocated funds for her to travel as part of her internship and do a certain kind of news story. And she came to me and she said she wanted to do a news story in Cuba. And I thought, well, she needs a producer. I said, I'm going to come with you and let's figure out what the news, what the story we want to cover in Cuba was. And at the time, this was late 90s. And it didn't take too much to realize that back in the 80s, Cuba had a response to the AIDS pandemic, the pandemic that we had before our current one.
Which always was a pandemic.
Completely different from any way that any other country in the world was handling the AIDS crisis. And that was to quarantine, which we all know that word now as well in a very different way. But this was quarantining anybody with a positive AIDS diagnosis. So it really helped them as a country to lock down anybody with positive HIV. And then to, and it was controversial, as you can imagine, right?
I mean,
you know, you're going to lock up somebody once, you know, they have a positive case. But then their whole mission was to preach the gospel of prevention. And so they were very open about, you know, if you went into quarantine and you got, treatments for your HIV, that you learned that condom use is the only thing you can do to prevent the spread of AIDS.
Yes.
And so that became like the big badge of pride for Cuba. So anyway, that's a little digression to share that this amazing intern and I went to Cuba. We went in through Mexico because we didn't actually have journalist visas. They wouldn't give those to us.
How dare they?
Right. So we went in kind of clandestinely, and Kira, the intern, and I interviewed just a ton of different people and came back and produced this really very, very interesting news story about how Cuba dealt with the AIDS crisis, and presented it to KFAI listeners and had it on the web for a while, and even presented it for a Associated Press award in their in their little documentary unit.
That is cool.
but my memories of KFAI and seeing you on Thursday nights were also very special. Again, particularly, I remember you you had a service dog. Do you still have a service dog?
I do. Yep, I do.
It cannot obviously be the same service dog.
No, sure, unfortunately not. But she's still just as good. So still a German Shepherd. I love those shepherds. So, yep, we still, and Charlene has one too. So together we rule the station there.
Yeah,
well, at least we think we do.
Oh, I'm sure you do. and will again when everyone's able to be back in person.
That's right. So you had, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, just to segue, I ended up going to Minnesota Public Radio shortly after we did that Cuba piece and helped produce the news on All Things Considered there for a couple of years before I left started to pursue other things in my life.
And then she left radio altogether. And you started your own company, which is no easy feat either, but you chose nuts. And so talk about how you decided to actually start your own company and why did you choose nuts?
Yeah, well, so I left NPR shortly after 9/11. I felt like I needed to do something that felt like it was, you know, kind of back in the vein of KFAI, giving back to the community and supporting it. So I went and worked for a nonprofit, and then I got engaged and got married and quit my job, and we traveled and came back and wanted to start a family and started that family. And two children later, who were just getting into school, I was ready to kind of get focused again on what my passions were. And I actually started yoga teacher certification training, not knowing if I wanted to teach or not. But one of the things that that I was learning about was Ayurveda, and that's the Indian health system, and it's very broad in its application because it applies to type of things you do for your body and the type of things you put in your body. And I started learning about health benefits of things like turmeric that it's an antioxidant and anti-inflammatory, and with a little bit of black pepper, your body's more open to absorbing those health benefits. And cinnamon is helps curb sugar cravings, stabilizes blood sugar, and it's a warming spice. And so as I was learning about sort of the yogic physical attributes, and then also learning about the healthcare attributes of it, I started applying it in my own life and putting it in my own food. And I'm gluten-free, and we would visit our local farmers market, and I was, aside from, you know, being able to pick up some wonderful produce, there was always like the baked goods or other gluten-laden snacks. And I thought, well, the farmers market is missing, like, you know, a niche that could only be filled by something that's gluten-free and high protein and tastes delicious. And right. I looked around and I just didn't see it. And that's really where the nuts came in. Wanted to, you know, make healthy, delicious nut snacks for family and friends, and thought like the farmer's market is the next best step. You know, it wasn't so much like, oh, I need to start a business. It was like, well, I just need to sort of share what I'm doing, because I'm not the only one, you know, who would want to have these sort of needs met.
Right. And obviously it took off.
Yeah. Yeah. So a funny story. I started thinking about what is it going to take to get into the farmer's market. This is 2 months into my yoga teaching certification. So mm-hmm. I've got one eye on learning the training and the other eye on, am I, you know, creating a brand with this product. And a friend invited me to participate in a holiday pop-up in the church basement of the Edina Morningside Church. And I had started putting the nuts, I had like three different varieties, and cashews, walnuts, pecans, and I had three different spices. The cayenne kick was a way to bring in some heat, and then also that turmeric that I mentioned, because cayenne actually helps. Sorry, it's like an appetite suppressant.
Okay.
So if you eat a little something with cayenne as a way to kind of hold off before you're ready to eat a big meal, you know, you just need a little bit. plus you add in that turmeric and the black pepper, and then all of a sudden you're getting these, you know, these great health benefits. And so that, there was that one. There was cinnamon spice. The cinnamon warming spice helps curb sugar cravings. Great for people with diabetes, because again, I was actually only sweetening with a little maple syrup that I was buying locally. And that was important to me too. So turmeric and the cinnamon together just created this, like, almost like that cinnamon toast crunch cereal. Like, that's like the effect that it has. But then you get that protein boost. And then I created this one called Lemon Rosemary. It has lemon and fresh rosemary and cumin seed. And cumin seed is the most popular spice worldwide, after black pepper. Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
I had no idea.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's the kind of thing that, like, you travel and you find that people put that in food, but it's, you know, it's just, you know, salt and pepper is just so common here in the States, and people are branching out a little bit more. But the but it was important to me to package in glass jars, right, and reduce my eco footprint as much as possible. So I showed up at that holiday market with beautiful glass jars with these beautiful nuts, and I sold them for pennies. Because my degree is in English and
English finance.
I was just pretty much giving that product away, and people were so excited that they were buying, like, jars at a time, and I'm selling out. And there's a woman from the Star and Tribune, and she says, "Oh, this is fantastic. I love what you're doing. I want to write about you for our local food section." I'm like, "Yeah, this is awesome." And so it just, like, things started to, like, fall into place. And I was going to do a pop-up at another holiday, actually at a friend's clothing boutique. And she had some other, like, housewares and things. And the article came out on a Thursday in the taste section. And she had a picture of the jars, and they looked really beautiful. And this boutique that I was going to do the pop-up in was only open from, like, noon to 5 on Saturday. So they had limited hours. I show up at, like, 11:45. There's already a line waiting to go in because they had seen the article.
That's fantastic.
Oh my God, Sam, it was crazy, because this just goes to show how bad I was at business, that I didn't even have enough product to take care of all the people that were in line. I did not know what to anticipate. I did not understand the appeal of, like, the demand that comes at holiday time. And so I learned really quickly, like, you know, holiday can make or break a business, and you got to be ready, and you got to have your product. So that was a really exciting experience to just kind of get everything off and rolling with people, like, really excited and getting some local press. And yet I was still in the middle of this yoga training, which was, like, a 9-month commitment. After the holidays, I put everything on hold. I went back to the yoga commitment. I finished up, and I figured out, like, okay, so, how do I sort of spread the news about the nuts? And that's what I started to do. I figured out, well, I'm going to do my own yoga, but I'm also going to see how I can take and grow with this company. So I gave it a formal name. I named it Isidore Nut Company after my grandfather. He was an ad man in St. Louis in the 1950s, and he would ask for organic food, and no one knew what he was talking about. So he was ahead of his time. He was a trailblazer, and I sort of followed in those footsteps of, like, here's a product that I know people want. They're excited to eat it, and we're filling that void.
So I want to talk a little bit about, you know, you do purchase locally. Talk about purchasing your maple syrup locally and anything that you can, as far as that goes. Why do you feel like that's so important?
So when I started this company, it obviously, as I was saying before the break, I didn't exactly have a head for business. So really knowing how to run those numbers early on was not my forte, and I wasn't trying to get rich quick scheme. If anything, I wanted to figure out how to give back to the community, how to support local makers as much as possible, feeling like we are inundated with multinational corporations that eat up little companies when they are just trying to grow and get strong. And the only way that, you know, sustainability works is if you know about, you know, who the local makers are and you're able to support them. So, for instance, our maple syrup comes from a wonderful, wonderful maple syrup purveyor in Taylor's Falls called Don's Sugar Shack. And he even works with his church and the boys and the Boy Scouts to tap the trees and things like that. And it's just, that's how sustainability works, right? Is that we reach out into our community and we say, hey, like, where is the need? Not how can I give more money to ConAgra? Let's figure out what sustainability is going to look like in our community. And oftentimes it's, you know, it's just as simple as like finding out who's at your local farmer's market and can they do bigger supplies than maybe just what they're offering, you know, on a weekly basis.
You were local for a while, but you now can be ordered like from pretty much anywhere. I mean, you're on Amazon now.
Yes.
How did you make that jump and get as much product? What clicked to give you the knowledge to be able to stretch and grow as you needed?
You know, my company's almost 8 years old. It'll be 8 years in June. And I feel like I've been learning so much along the way, and I still have so much to learn, but very much, I attribute very much my learning and my understanding to the local food community. We have an incredible resource here in Minnesota. Just starting with the Department of Agriculture, they actually have a whole arm that is devoted to helping local food businesses grow. There's a cottage food license that you can get if you're just starting out in your home and you like to make jam or pickles or something. You can get that license and then you can go and sell at the farmer's market and you put up a little sign that says, you know, product made in my home. Mm-hmm. And then as you grow, you know, there's so many different avenues because this community is so, it's just stretching and flexing and supportive of one another. In fact, the larger companies that we were home to, General Mills, Target, places like that, they're interested in helping smaller businesses get a leg up and grow and expand. And there's lots of different programs that are there. Grow North is a new program, kind of came out of support from General Mills and Target and came out of the University of Minnesota. So places like that are available to supply information and support and education to all sorts of entrepreneurs. So I felt like I was just super supported in trying to grow. And then just asking lots and lots and lots of questions.
Now, do you season and everything? You do your own seasoning and everything on your nuts?
Yeah. So we buy walnuts from walnuts come from California. We buy pecans from Oklahoma. This is a great family run business that. Very committed to being environmental stewards and proclaim that right on their website. And we are sourcing cashews from India. And then we bring all of those raw ingredients in. We've got that great local maple syrup. We've got our spices that we purchase through local co-op. Partners Warehouse, which actually supports the co-ops. And then we do all of our production. And, you know, one of the reasons that I'm here tonight to talk to you is all about where we produce. Can I share that story?
You can start to, yes.
Okay. So we produce, so real quick, the fact that, you know, we were able to grow slowly in the farmers markets and then even start to get into some co-ops. About 5 years ago, I kind of looked around and saw, oh, wow, like we started to fill a void a couple years ago. And there are some big companies that have jumped in both feet. They can scale faster. Their products are, a little more competitively priced, and they are growing and they are national and they are kind of filling that void we thought we were filling. So in the summer of 2018, I was almost ready to close up shop. I thought that I was going to finish out the holiday season and then, you know, devote my life to some other passion because other people were doing a really good job with high quality spice, nuts, and not too much sugar. And then someone told me about a brand new kitchen at a place called JHAP, stands for Jewish Housing and Programming, located in Golden Valley. And JHAP was located within Cornerstone Creek Apartments. And so when I went to tour this brand new kitchen, beautiful kitchen in Golden Valley, the kitchen director said, when people rent this kitchen, we'd also like them to possibly employ the tenants who live at Cornerstone Creek. And this is when, you know, the floodgates opened in my mind, because what she said is the tenants of Cornerstone Creek are adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities living independently. And that to me, yeah, it was eye-opening. It was, oh my God, absolutely. When can I start? You know, this sounds like the most amazing opportunity. And it really was. It has changed everything. It has inspired me to, you know, grow bigger, proclaim on our packaging that we hire people of all abilities. We offer customized inclusive employment now working at JHAP and or producing at JHAP. And it's really one of the most exciting things I've ever done in my whole life.
There must have been a little bit of a learning curve. Talk about that, learning how to work with them and them learning how to work with you.
Absolutely. So one of the great things, so the woman who was the kitchen director at the time named Nicole said, you know, people with disabilities that that you can hire, many of them come with job coaches, and so that job coach is there to support your future employee, to help them gain confidence and learn the skills needed to do the job you want them to do, and we're here. The job coach is here to facilitate kind of a smooth transition. And that, Sam, was that was just icing on the cake, because it gave me the opportunity to meet people that I had my eyes open. I did not understand until I moved into JHAP kitchen that 80% of people with a disability are either unemployed or underemployed.
Right.
And to know that I could, you know, even in my small way with my small company, try to help reduce that incredible level of unemployment felt so important. And to know that if you have someone like a job coach to make it, you know, just help make that transition that much smoother, you know, why shouldn't anybody do this?
And you, I mean, I think some of the big talk with people talking about underemployment is, you know, some of them work in these workshops that they make, you know, just a couple bucks an hour. And you really try hard to do as much competitively pay as you can.
I absolutely do. Yeah. My goal is to get everybody to $15 an hour. And we start at, we start at 11. And usually pre-pandemic, it was you start at $11 an hour, you work for a month, and that is kind of a probationary period. You figure out, is this a good job for you? I figure out, are you a good fit for us? And if you are, then I'll bump you up to 12.
But that's a reasonable thing. And a lot of people with disabilities are not always paid equally as their counterparts.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's, you know, we're a small company. And so, you know, we can't, you know, we're not talking, you know, 40 hour a week positions right now. But what we are talking about is showing people how valued they are, how grateful we are to have them a part of our team, how they get to learn alongside somebody without a visible disability, and they get to help teach people, you know, without a visible disability, you know, their skills and their abilities. And that's one of the best things that you can do is just, you know, share knowledge.
So I'm really thrilled that you have found this niche, because I think that people with that are just, you know, working in the world, that are hiring people, they don't always stumble upon that and understand that people with disabilities can be just as hard a worker, just as, in fact, sometimes more loyal. How did things change for your company, if at all, during the pandemic?
Well, so they changed in a couple of interesting ways. Even leading up to the pandemic, I was at a point where I had learned from one of my first employees that that the packaging we used, craft bags that you fill by hand, you weigh the nuts, and then you seal the bag and then you put on a label, takes a learning curve. And if you have challenges with, you know, dexterity, that might not be the easiest thing for you to put on that label. So one of the things we were doing is two people would work alongside one another. Somebody with maybe some dexterity challenges would open the bag, fill the bag, close the bag, and then hand it off to another employee who would put on that label. And what I realized was, well, we've got to get away from this kind of, you know, this kind of packaging, because it just makes it that much harder for the employee who has to hand off the bag. It would be much better if that person could, you know, do the complete job. And I started looking into how could we change our packaging, have pre-printed bags or something. But really what I wanted to convey was what we're doing, and put that information on our packaging. The pandemic kind of brought some of those dreams to a crashing halt, because a lot of our business, we were doing more business selling to hotels catering companies, and a lot of that obviously closed up, you know, real fast because of the pandemic, sadly. And so the idea of rebranding right away was not, it just wasn't as feasible. But what was feasible was starting to share the message of what we were doing, whether that was me actually getting an opportunity to do things like I'm doing now, talk to your audience about the importance of inclusive employment and reducing unemployment in the disability community. We decided to put it on the current packaging that we had. Again, there's those labels and they have to be hand applied, but there's nothing stopping us from saying right on that packaging, you know, we hire people of all abilities, handmade by people of all abilities. And that was something that, that came about because of the pandemic was, let's just, you know, we're not ready to invest in a bigger rebrand, but we can get that message start spreading that message and spreading that word. And that was hugely important to me. And I even found that some of my employees that I had who had family members who were immunocompromised couldn't come back to work. But they, you know, they were people who had other opportunities. So that wasn't necessarily within the disability community that we were, you know, that we were losing employees. If anything, we were able to look within the outside of JHAP and find programs. There's programs like Reach for Resources. There's ways to work with some of the public schools because they have programs specifically to help people with different intellectual developmental disabilities to get them, you know, job training. And that became a big focus, was how can we make a commitment to hire more people with disabilities and spread that word. And really that became a big part of our focus in the pandemic, is helping people understand that what we make is a delicious, healthy product that makes a meaningful gift. Because when you buy Isadora Nuts, you are helping us reduce unemployment in the disability community.
And that is an excellent thing. I'd like to talk a little bit, if you would, about Jewish Disability Acceptance Awareness Inclusion Month. I'm working on it. Can you tell me a little bit about what that means?
Yes. So amazing local woman, her name's Shelley Christensen. She worked for an organization called Jewish Family and Children's Service and was their inclusion director. And this was about 35 years ago that people were, and I'm sure, you know, you're no stranger to, just in the last, 10, 15 years, even the issues of inclusion and disability rights have gained more prominence. But the idea that it's very easy to isolate people with disabilities, particularly in a faith community.
Because that's true.
They don't know how to support, it really just kind of goes back to old models where people don't ask enough questions to figure out, how can we support the people in our community, in our midst?
And it's interesting that you say that, because I would have thought that in faith communities, it would be better, but that's not necessarily so.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the struggle, right? As everyone is trying to get better. I think that there's just been, I think it's breaking down old barriers.
Yes.
Because when you've done things a certain way, you don't see the reason to make those changes necessarily. So 2009 actually is when the whole movement around helping people in the Jewish community say, we need to accept, be more aware of, and include people with disabilities into our religious life. And they chose the month of February because in the Jewish community, in the Jewish religion, there are Jewish holidays all over the calendar. And one of the things in particular, there's a big holiday, the Jewish New Year, that is kind of in the harvest time. So September, October, which is also right after school starts. So then you have that month that, time is really taken up with things. And then, you've got the Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa all in the end of the year,
right?
In December. And so what they wanted to figure out was, well, when is the time when we can pick a month where we can start to raise that awareness, and then we can just get the ball moving. And so that's why they settled on February. They said, let's take this to our community. Let's start having talks. Let's start having symposiums. Let's you know, and it started on a local level, Minnesota and some other states. And by 2009, it had taken off globally. And it has really expanded. And there are all sorts of different organizations that, you know, really pride themselves on having all sorts of different talks and discussions. And in fact, I'm going to be part of a webinar next week, specifically around inclusion. And the idea is have those, you know, get the information, get the education in February, and then get the ball rolling in March and April so that your congregation is thinking about, well, what can we do? Where do we have blind spots that we are not supporting people in the disability community within our congregation? That is just, you know, as you said, I mean, it's just so important because if people think, oh, we're doing a great job, and then you realize, no, there's lots of stories about people who feel like they're being left behind. This is how you get them, you know, without shaming them, to say like, okay, what kind of a difference can we make?
And for you, like, how do you see inclusion besides employment, which is a big one, but it's not the only one?
No. I think, you know, one of the things I really like to emphasize is, you know, we've all got the challenges that we, you know, that we bring to the table, whether it's a visible disability or it's an invisible disability. I'm the first to say that, you know, I have a generalized anxiety and I take medication for it. And I need that. You know, that's really important for me to kind of be a functioning adult and parent and business owner. But that, you know, we're all individuals and we all want to be valued and we all have our stories. And we just have to understand that inclusion means the openness and the willingness to hear other people's stories and understand and learn from them and know that there is so much that we can gain when we're just open to gaining a greater understanding of, you know, who our fellow, you know, who our fellow citizens are. And Judaism actually has a really beautiful teaching practice. It's called Tikkun Olam. It means repairing the world. Mm. And so I take that message into everything when you say, you know, what does inclusion mean to you? It means how can we make this world a better place for every single human that that is living in it?
And I actually would like to go a little deeper as far as I'll tell a story on my behalf. When I was a teenager, I was part of a religious group, and I left that religious group. Some of it was because it was my belief had changed a little bit, but half of it at least was because I didn't feel included. And included meaning to me was, did anybody, a teenager is really important to feel included with the other teenagers. So what teenagers ever called me to ask me to hang? None of them. Mm. Which ones ever called me to ask me to go to a movie? None of them. Who ever, you know, gave me a task to be a part of some kind of fun, you know, thing that they were doing for charity or whatever, you know, it all comes down to that's true inclusivity, right? And I think that is something that people need to remember. You know, listening is great and knowing stories is great, but you really have to take the extra step too and make sure you are actually doing the work of giving that person a part in your faith and your church and your employment and your wherever you are. You know, they've got to have some kind of part that they're doing, because if they don't feel valued or that they hold enough of, you know, that they matter, it tends to make them not care if they're as big a part of the group or not. So
I spoke to Shelley Christensen, the the creator of J-Dame earlier today, and she said people's lives depend on belonging.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. That's good. You mentioned leveling the playing field. Tell me what that means to you.
Well, I think I would turn that back to you. You talked about, as a teenager feeling like, you're kind of on the outside,
Right.
There's the support you get from your church group, but, just as a normal teenager growing up, no one's saying like, hey, Sam, you want to go to the movies and hang out? And I think that backing up a little bit, this idea of 80% unemployment in the disability community creates barriers for people with disabilities. You basically stop seeing people with disabilities in the workforce. And so then you stop thinking about the needs of people with disabilities. I think we really need to work at, in order to level the playing field, we need to work at how do we get people who are experiencing isolation, how do we hear from them? How do we get them front and center so that children growing up today, maybe see someone with a disability and realize like that's something that they, that kid's very similar to them, except for, maybe one thing. How do we help? Would you care to say, something about like where you think,
sure.
And as a parent as well?
Sure. I think for me, growing up and being even a young adult, one of the best things was, people always consider like if somebody comes up to you and starts asking you about something that's rude. I think it's not, ignorance and the unknown, that's what scares people, right? Not knowing about if somebody's using crutches or how they got that way or what their difference is or what can they really see. That's what scares people. The not having the knowledge about that type of disability, people are horrified by, just when you mention, like if you mention being deaf or a paraplegic or blind or whatever, that scares people. But if you talk about it, not that it will scare them less, but at least they'll have knowledge and makes it human, right? It makes it reaches out to say, I am me and I cannot see you because I had whatever. And this is how I learned. Look at, I can show you Braille. And this is how so all these things that you would learn about somebody, that is, I think it's what it's all about, is asking and talking to them and not being afraid to confront them about the disability and not being shushed or don't say that. That will be, that's embarrassing to me. It's not you. You're not the one with the disability. So, I really would encourage parents to allow their kids to ask. Most people don't mind talking about it. And in fact, it's an educational thing, if you put it that way. Right. You'll always get the cranky person just like you get the cranky person without the disability. So it can work either way.
Exactly.
We all live in that state once in a while. In general, I think people like to have somebody who wants to know about them. And that's what it's all about, I think.
I want to chime in. I think we should take a page from the children who are at times, to the chagrin of their parents, are bold and say, what happened to your eye?
Yes, that's true.
Just talk about it. Let's just share. And I'm willing to share, but you got to ask me. I'm not, I can't just stand on the corner and say, okay, well, my eye. But I think we are sometimes a society where we take care of ourselves and, oh, well, that person, well, they probably can't do much. And I don't think that's fair. And I think sometimes children have a better handle on it, but it gets stifled as they get older.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think, yeah, and you'll find some people who will share more than others. And that's anybody, you know, regardless of their disability or age or race or anything. Some people are willing to talk your head off about it. Other people, they're quick and they say what they, and for whatever reasons, right? They may have been shamed themselves. They may have had people tease them mercilessly. They may,
right.
Or they may be brought up in a very accepting, supportive family. That can make all the difference. And I think that those kind of things are what we need to all be aware of. But the more I think conversation happens and the more understanding happens, the more human sides, I think, come out of everything.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So I commend you guys for having this month. I had no idea that this existed, and I think that's great. And I commend, was it Shelley who has so much information on it, right? Is she the one who started it? Who started it?
Yeah. There was a consortium of Jewish educators and some rabbis, but she kind of was the one spearheading it. And it just kind of grew out of this idea 35 years ago. And it's just kind of grown and blossomed and taken off. All on its own. But she, you know, pre-pandemic was traveling around the world talking about, you know, just the sheer importance of it. And she's written a book actually as well about belonging specifically.
Well, we need to get her on our show. I will say the idea that I don't always get out much. So, but the idea that I have not heard about this means you guys need to talk a whole lot more.
Well, that, and I know you said when we kind of had our prep call about job coaches, and I think that that's something that, with the new Biden administration, that there's going to be so many more avenues available to support services for people with disabilities and making sure the funding is there. But that, you know, if I can do a call to action, it's for anyone listening who, works for a company where they feel like their employer could, you know, kind of take the lead on bringing in, offering more inclusive employment, and just starting by, you know, talking to some different programs and figuring out, you know, the support that people can have when they are brought in with a job coach, just different programs, but that's available. You know, I mean, we could just start to see some more transformation happening around unemployment and underemployment in the disability community.
Yes, I think that's right. How can people find out more about your company and how can they get your nuts?
Yeah, thanks. Zoom on over to Isadore. It's spelled Isadore, nutco.com, isadorenutco.com. We are also on Amazon, so you can purchase from there. If you're in the Twin Cities, you can visit some of your local co-ops. We're in the Wedge, Linden Hills, Eastside Co-op. We're also out at the Minnetonka General Store if you're up in the western suburbs. Certix carries us as well, so you can pick up and share and reach out to me too. I'm on Instagram. I did a little link to this evening as well on there. So
excellent.
I don't know if you get to see that, Sam, or not. But.
We are going to have to wrap it up, and I appreciate you coming on. And I will say now we are very much a global station now because we have all these podcasts and we have our own KFAI app And we are on the internet at kfbi.org/disabilityandprogress. So you can feel free to order as well from Amazon, as Tasha said. So you don't have to be in Minnesota to get them. You can order anywhere.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on, and good job with your community work, and keep it up. I commend
Thank
you. And
you.
It was so, so wonderful to hear from you after so long. I'm thrilled to see where you are now.
Well, I'm grateful that you are still going strong with your program and just offering so much great advocacy and education. And thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. This has been Disability and Progress. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. Charlene Dahl is my research team. Annie Harvey is my engineer. We were speaking with Tasha Kellen. Tasha was talking about her company, Isadore Nutt Company, and as well, Jewish Disability Acceptance Awareness and Inclusion Month. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. You can be on my email list at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com to find out what's coming up and ask questions about future shows. Thanks for listening. Good night.
KFAI.org.